Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
O God, who have taught us to chasten our bodies for the healing of our souls, enable us, we pray, to abstain from all sins and strengthen our hearts to carry out your loving commands. Through our Lord Jesus Christ, your Son, who lives and reigns with you in the unity of the Holy Spirit, God forever and ever. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I use that prayer because it's a good example of how the liturgy really sees the human person as an integrated whole of, you know, body, soul, mind, heart, and all of this for the obedience of faith. And if you were to take, if you were to actually look at the collects for the first week of Lent, it is quite interesting how often in that first week of Lent, the opening collects for the Mass or for the Divine Office speak about the enlightenment of the mind. In other words, it isn't just a question of affect, but of understanding, enlightening the mind, enlightening our understanding, Christ be our light, etc. Which is simply to kind of affirm what we've been talking about. What I want to briefly talk about this afternoon is to simply talk a little bit more about St. Thomas's idea of virtue and then how the capital sins fall into the role that they play in you might say, bringing forth the life of virtue. As I said to you earlier, for St. Thomas, you see, because the person is a composite of body and soul, what he sees as, you might say, the stuff or the substance of growing in the life of holiness and virtue is that your life becomes more and more progressively more ordered. Ordering things is very important for St. Thomas because he sees that the intellect is the highest of human powers. And so it is the role of the intellect to direct the will. So, you know, the choices that you make come out of what you know and how you've thought about what you know and how you see that there are options and then you choose from the options. So that it's, a kind of rigorous thinking is really part of the way to holiness for him. And so the right ordering of a person's life for him involves the interplay between the intellect and the will, the material and the spiritual, the intuitive and the kind of doctrinal. You see, for St. Thomas, the spiritual life is not simply a question of the prayers that you say or the religious devotions that you have. It's really a question of the quality of your life, and I think I've kind of made my point there. Virtue, you see, is for him then in right reason. And this is what we mean when we, of course, he's borrowing Aristotle's idea that virtue is in the mean. That is, it's between the two extremes. And of course, as I'm sure you've already experienced, whether you're very, you might say, very conservative or very liberal, those end up being the same positions often, where it's in the mean. So, for example, gluttony can be both overeating, but it can also be refusing to eat, the two extremes. Whereas, you know, letting reason guide you in what you will eat and drink, etc. So that always for St. Thomas, virtue, in medios dat virtus, so that the reasonable, the holy person is one who stands in the middle and lives a balanced life according to his or her insights, education, personality. So that, I mean, there's no one form that you, there's no cookie cutter form for being a saint, and saints' personalities, they remain the same. I mean, I'm thinking of Mother Teresa of Calcutta, of course. She was a very difficult person. she was that way even as a holy person. If you're a chatty Cathy, you're going to be a chatty Cathy saint. If you're an anxious, ridden person, you know, or you have a very strong will, will there be some modification because the rough edges are shaved away? Yes, but by and large, it's going to be pretty much the same. As a consequence, you see, for St. Thomas, one's human nature depends upon and is motivated by God's influence in one's life. So that when one is, especially we're speaking here of the baptized, one who has been baptized into the passion, death, and resurrection of Christ is no longer simply a human person with a human nature, but was a human nature that is now under the influence of grace. There has been infused into the soul God's grace. And that infusion for Thomas, as for the whole of the tradition, takes the form of infused virtues, faith, hope, and charity, the theological virtues, and the allied cardinal moral virtues. Now, but what is a virtue is the question. As I said to you this morning, virtue for St. Thomas is not simply the repetition. It's not a habit. You just don't keep doing it. For him, a virtue is an interior act. That is, that it is something that comes from within, and it has to do with the dialectic between your intellect and your will. That produces certain decisions and choices that then manifest themselves in the exterior behavior of your actions. Your actions come from within. And so therefore, for him, the development of the capacity of the inner self to reason, to know, to decide, to choose, these are all very important aspects of the human person. And therefore, virtue is going to come out of the formation of a conscience. If you don't have a very strongly formed conscience, then you... Now, you know, I would say, in light of what I said this morning about my being a rule-breaking kind of person, I you know, for a number of years when I was very young, I thought I didn't have a conscience because I was not a rule keeper. I mean, I didn't care about the rules. And I thought, well, gee, then there's something wrong with me. Well, there were many things wrong with me, but that wasn't the particular thing that... But, of course, I came to realize that I had to understand that my conscience had been formed through many influences, my parents, my teachers, my education, but my own native personality. And so the way in which I would find the way to virtue was going to be unique. And this is very important for you to understand St. Thomas. For him, there is no one single way. Because of his understanding of creation and causality, he understands that every single human person is unique. And therefore, the way in which you are going to find your way to God is going to be unique. And this is why it's so difficult if you read manuals of the spiritual life or, plans of how to get holy or what, because it may not apply to you exactly as it is written. Today, there's a great renewal of popularity among a lot of young people of two things. First, some of the kind of scholastic manuals like Garrigou Lagrange or Father Jordan Amann's works. I don't know if any of you have read any of these things. A lot of young people like them very much. Or John of the Cross is very popular right now among young people. And you read, you read The Dark Night of the Soul and you begin to say, well, how do I fit into this? See, in other words, these texts are not always very helpful in this, that you may use them as a kind of a plan that you're going to think you're going to apply to yourself. And it usually doesn't work. And therefore, you spend a lot of time taking your spiritual well-being. You know, how am I doing? You're taking your spiritual pulse. And this is, of course, counterproductive because you have to go within yourself and discover with confidence what it is that God is asking of you as you are his beloved, as you are the object of his desire, of his pursuit, and of his determination to save you. And therefore, this is why you might say that the spiritual life is, in a way, the greatest of human adventures, but it's a risky business. This is not for the faint-hearted. You have to really there is fortitude that is required. And of course, that means that there has to be, you have to depend very much on the infused virtue of hope, for example. What is the virtue of hope? It's that infused gift by which we can take on the arduous for a good end, that is, to see God, beatitude, the beatific vision. You can endure a whole lot for that purpose. And it isn't that you simply find the resources within you, but that by going within, you have to discover your own abilities, your own native capacities, but also God's grace, how it is that God helps you. And you see, that's what virtue is about. Virtue is about this interior dialectic between the interior and the exterior, between the natural and the supernatural, between the human and the divine. And that's why we say that it is that a human life is not only very complex, but it is mysterious. Now, why do we do all of this? And this is kind of apropos of what I was listening to this morning at the end of the discussion. The point of it all is that one, as a human person, comes to this state of being which is called purity of heart. That is, that one's inner self, so you might say, triumphs in expressing the integration between the interior and the exterior, that one is devoid of one's self-interest and can love God because God is lovable, or simply because God is, rather than because God is going to give me, or I'm going to be saved, or that, you know, I mean, and obviously this is not something that happens overnight. It takes a lifetime, and it can only happen through the influence of God's grace. So that in the monastic tradition, of course, this involves what is called apatheia. Apatheia is that monastic virtue by which we become passionlessness. And this has to do with St. Thomas's idea of virtue. See, for the monastics in both the Eastern and Western tradition, it isn't that you become free of passions. It doesn't mean that you're never going to be angry, or you're never going to feel lustful, or you're never going to be want to overindulge in food and drink, but that your passions, when they come into your life, no longer determine your actions. That there is a certain freedom, you might say, there is a, it's like the moat around the castle in a way. You know, there's my anger again. We might say in modern terminology, the emotion or passion of anger, probably most, well, I mean, the tradition suggests that everybody is angry, and that everybody is angry for the whole of their lives. By that, I don't mean that that's all that you experience or that's your definition. But that, you know, sometimes people will say, well, I'm not an angry person. I don't think that's true. I doubt that that's true. Everybody has anger. And you don't get rid of it. It's going to probably come across your screen till the day you die. But in the life of virtue, it doesn't mean that you'll never feel anger, but that you will gain a facility with knowing how to keep it at a distance. That is, oh, there it is again. But you do not engage it in your will. And there is, and for St. Thomas, you see, virtue is really a kind of power that comes from within that you actualize through grace. And this power is given in baptism. That is, that with the infused virtues, that you get these capacities to act in a virtuous way. Virtue, you see, is not simply the avoidance of evil, or the avoidance of the deadly sins. It is the capacity for greatness. It's about excellence. It's about flourishing, both in human flourishing and in supernatural flourishing. Because, see, for him, virtue is God's grace triumphing in that interaction between my intellect and my will. Because when I believe that I am loved unconditionally, a lot of my anxieties about how I'm doing and how I should be doing or how I'm not doing begin to dissipate. They begin to disappear. Now, why is it that we have the problem of vice, of sins? Well, of course, Thomas accepts the teaching of Augustine that even though in baptism all sin is taken away, there remains, even in the baptized soul, free of all sin, both original and any actual sin that has occurred since baptism, that there remains the inclination to sin, what is called concupiscence. And it is this, you might say, this pristine, innocent soul burdened with concupiscence that has to face the reality of the seven deadly sins, or as Thomas would prefer to call them, the capital sins. And of course, capital because that comes from the Latin word caput, the head. And these are the sins that beget other sins. That's the problem. And, you know, he names, I think, 72. Are there 72 daughters of the seven deadly sins? There are a lot. And of course, this is a feminist, it drives feminists crazy that, you know, they're called the daughters of the capital sins. But I mean, what are you going to do? This is the 13th century we're talking about. You'll have to forgive him. The reason that we have to deal with the question of the capital sins is precisely because even though we have been baptized into the passion, death, and resurrection of Christ, there is still this pull. There's still the remnants. Not exactly what he calls the fomes peccati, but there is this inclination to a disposition. There remains a disposition to sin. And it is, and this is where the Christian person is vulnerable. That's why I use the phrase being vulnerable to sin, vulnerable to death. That, and so that virtue becomes the antidote for the deadly sins or for vice, not because it's the cure-all for those evils, but because it can rescue the soul and take the soul higher. You see, really, that's the point of virtue for Thomas. Not simply that it is the antidote for sin, but that it is really the way to glory, to transformation. In other words, virtue is about being able to do the very best that you can possibly do according to who you are as a human person under the influence of grace. So, if I were standing, well, I am, if I'm sitting here, supposing St. Dominic is sitting next to me, and you would say, well, I don't know what you would say. I presume you'd be more interested in him than you are in me. Okay. He's a great saint. I'm not. So did God love him more than he loves me? Probably. Yeah, I would say. Clearly, he manifests more greatly the love of God. And did he respond better than I have? Yes, he did. Now, why? I don't know why. If you ask God why, of course, that's a very dangerous thing. Because God does not, he will not be accountable to you or to me. The fact is that I'm not a great saint. And he is. And therefore, I can only be a virtuous man according to the gifts, the limited gifts that God has given me. I'm not as intelligent. I'm not as good. Oh, there are many, many reasons, factors that are beyond my control. And so the fact that, so am I less than St. Dominic? You bet I am. And in heaven, is that going to make a difference? Of course it is. Because the truth has to triumph. But I'm loved as who I am, you see. And this was, I was mentioning St. Augustine's commentary on St. John's Gospel, but Augustine says elsewhere that if you believe that God is perfect, then everything that he does is perfect. And therefore, the way he loves you is perfect. The way he loves me is perfect. And so the fact that I am not a great saint really cannot be my concern. I can only be who I am. And virtue means that I am able to attain to the highest degree of union with God that is possible according to the gifts, to the way I have been made by God. And this is why our lives are always a bit of an adventure. You never know what's ahead. And when I say that, I don't mean in terms of your career or where you're going to go, you know, geographically. But in terms of your inner journey, I mean, you know, God surprises us. And if you become a man or a woman of prayer, and I hope to God that you will become if you're not one already, you will find that your inner life has a certain adventuresomeness to it. And God asks things of us interiorly that we would least expect, or that we least want to do. Never underestimate the power of grace. Therefore, you see, virtue is really about how the human person is going to come to the fullness of his or her perfection according to his or her nature. And this is why, of course, for Thomas, it is so important that we see that each person is unique. The seven capital sins, for him, of course, he changes, as you've already heard, he changes the order slightly. He begins with sloth. But for Thomas, you see, sloth is not so much about the vice or the sin, it's about the virtue of charity. And so after sloth comes envy. That's about the virtue of charity. Avarice, justice, vainglory, fortitude, gluttony, temperance, lust, temperance, wrath, temperance. You see, for him, the important thing is that you learn a facility with how to deal with those onslaughts of vice or sin, and in such a way that you look towards the virtue. And what is virtue about for him? It's really about the habit of turning directly to God. Because you see, it's always about acknowledging the fact that I am loved, perfectly and unconditionally. So for example, when I am tempted to, I think I mentioned this morning, if I'm tempted to tell a lie, the question would be, well, am I going to go through some elaborate interior pretzel-making process of, thinking about a vice and a virtue, or am I going to train myself in virtue to look to Jesus Christ, to say the holy name of Jesus, or to just be aware that God is calling me to live in the truth? I mean, it can be a very simple turning of the mind, but you see, this is all about what goes on inside of yourself. What goes on inside of your mind and your heart, and how that moves you in time. And therefore, you have to be a person of reflection. See, virtue presumes for Thomas that you're somebody who ponders, who thinks, who's busy, who's got an inner life. And therefore, learning the way of virtue requires a formation. He believes that you have to be formed. He would even say educated in virtue. And how do you get formed in virtue? It doesn't just happen, with seeds planted and being watered. It really happens through the agency of other human beings. That's the role of parents, to educate, to form the conscience of their children. Teachers, formators, spiritual fathers and mothers, all kinds of influences. And that's why, of course, if you're ever in a position of being an educator or any way in which you work with other people, you have a responsibility to really be helping to form their consciences. The formation of the human conscience for St. Thomas is really about formation in virtue. And it is not just learning how to be good by practice. Now, of course, our parents force us to do this, right? I mean, that's how they take the stick and they beat us with it. And it can be helpful, but it is not going to produce ultimately virtue. It will produce behavior, but virtue is about the self connecting to the other, who is God. You see, the only point in virtue is to open the heart, the mind, to the reality of the divine person, the triune Godhead. You see, that's really what it's about. And so anything that falls short of that, It might be interesting, it might produce a nicer family life, more tranquility in the home. If you're from a big family, as I am from, there can be chaos, a lot of chaos in the home, because when you've got a lot of people together in a small space, there's a lot of quarreling and fighting and, you know, one-upmanship and all of that kind of thing. So that maybe if people were more well-behaved, it would be nice, peaceful, tranquil. But in terms of the point of life, what does that mean? Well, I suppose it means that you won't have to take antacids. You probably won't need to go to a shrink so often, you know. You know, you won't have to up your meds every Monday morning. But it doesn't really mean anything if it falls short of your ultimate destination, which is, of course, to be with God for all eternity and to share in God's own life. So that the point you see of virtue is that it is through the repetition of the inner interior acts that one gains not only a facility with turning towards God, but one begins to be able to turn to God with joy. Now, when I say turn to God, this can sound very religious. You know, it can sound like you have to say a Hail Mary, or you have to, but it's really not quite that direct. It can be very indirect. That is, that you can, in a time of prayer at Mass, for example, you can, after Holy Communion, it doesn't have any time during the Mass, or in church, or in a moment of prayer, you can make a kind of a decision that you're going to try to be more open to God. And returning to that resolution interiorly can be the indirect turning to God. So I don't mean that it has to have specific words, but it becomes an inner disposition. And that's the word that Thomas would use. You see, that virtue is really an inner disposition towards God. And you see that all of your human activity is the way in which that is actually exercised. Now, St. Thomas makes the distinction between the deadly sin or the capital sins and the capital vices. The sin is a discrete human action, but the vice is a kind of disposition towards what can become the sin. And that is really why the formation of the conscience is so important. Because a well-formed conscience is the antidote to vice. For example, if I could think of a good example. Yes. Supposing you have a colleague that is much smarter than you are, or maybe not as smart as you, maybe you think you're as smart as he or she is, but they are more successful academically. And you can envy them, you know? And that envy can be either, you can envy it in one moment, but it can be a kind of general attitude that you have towards someone, or even towards a whole group of people. And it might be that when they are rewarded, that you don't clap. You're not happy. You know, you're kind of like, well, that's fine, but you know, really, if I didn't have the problems that I have, or if I weren't ill-treated by some professor, I would, etc. There's a kind of disposition that you have towards envy. Okay, well, you know, in the spiritual life, if you're going to learn the way of virtue, as a man or a woman of reflection, you have to begin to realize to yourself, you know, there's something wrong with my being so habitually negative towards this person because he or she performs academically so well. And so this becomes an arena where, as St. Thomas would understand it, where you have to start thinking and praying, and through this process, coming to a certain choice that when you see yourself doing this, there's an acknowledgement. You take responsibility for it, you ask God to forgive you, and then eventually, over a period of time, and for most people, our loss of vices is something that you don't realize when it's happening. And all of a sudden, after a period of time, you think, gee, I don't think so negatively anymore about that person. Or it doesn't bother me so much when other people do well academically, better than I do. So that No, this brings me to something that I think is very important. Because a lot of the literature about the deadly sins or the capital sins, and especially from the early tradition, which is very precious information, but life in the modern world is a little more complicated sometimes. And I would make a distinction between emotion and vice. Because vice is a disposition towards the evil inclination. But you see, emotions are really just our feelings, and they're morally neutral. And so you can have a feeling of anger. Let us say that you have someone that your arch enemy. Does anybody here have an arch enemy? No, you're all good people, so you don't have such things. Oh, that's wonderful. It's so wonderful to deal with innocence.
I just have too many to count.
Thank you. Yeah, right. Yes, yes. I only have a few thousand myself. Yeah. And most of them are wearing white habits, I'm sorry to say. They shouldn't be. but they are. And they should never have been accepted. You know, and I could have told them that, you know, many years ago. And I did in a few cases. And they ignored me. So here I am. Let us say that you have an arch enemy. Well, you see, And let's say that it's a person that there's been a kind of open opposition. You've argued, you've fought, you've competed, you've hated, you've trampled, you've manipulated, you've done everything you can except set them alight on fire, you know what I mean, which maybe you thought of. I always feel about my archenemies that when I was younger, I wanted to kill them. But, you know, now I would want to torture them first. I mean, I want to be sure that they hurt. You know, I don't want them to just go away. they got to have a few bandages on them, you know. A cast or two. Let us say that you come to forgive them completely, and they come to forgive you completely. When you see them again, it's quite possible that anger will come before you again. And it doesn't mean that there's a sin here, you see. It doesn't even mean that there's necessarily a vice. It can be that it is the emotion. And very often the emotions that are the remnant, these are the kind of fomes, peccati. That is, it's like, perhaps the best example would be an image that would help would be if you've ever had a surgery where you have a scar, you know, where you've been sewn up, and usually there's a bump of some kind. I have a piece of metal in my wrist here, and I have a scar. And that scar, when it's cold out, it gets red. And when it gets hot out, it gets blue. And, you know, it makes me, I ache. Well, that's a scar that's left over. Everything is fine. It works fine. It has for many years. Well, that's what this is like, you see, in the spiritual life, that there is often emotional leftovers that come before us. And apatheia, that I was speaking about, that is that virtue by which we are passionlessness, that is that does not intimidate, that doesn't strike fear, that isn't a warning signal. It's really rather a moment when I am to immediately turn to the Lord. You see, virtue progressively becomes less opposition to vice and more relational. That is, that God is worth turning away from this. God is worth it for me to resist this. And this becomes then more paying more attention to God than it does to the capital sin or the capital vice, you see. In other words, God becomes all in all. And this is what, of course, all the great saints mean when they speak about being completely given over to God. It's not that they don't have the emotions. It's not that they don't have the same imaginary things that come before, because you can have, I mean, you know, all of a sudden you can be very calm and peaceful, and you can have very bizarre sexual images come before you, or you can dream about these things. And what does that mean? Well, I mean, I suppose it depends on the person and what your history is. But, you know, it need not strike fear or danger. It depends on whether or not you understand this, that all turning to vice or sin would be a decision to turn away from a relationship, the relationship of love. That is, and by that I don't mean your love for God. I mean, first of all, his love for you. You see, really, the heart of it, and this is, of course, what St. Thomas discovered when he said, you know, that all that he had written was so much straw. Nothing but you, O Lord. And this is really the goal of our life as Christians. That is that God becomes all in all. And it means that you're still going to have your same personality. And in a way, that's the bad news. You know what I mean? It would be great if we could all become, if our personalities could be reshaped. I mean, I would love it. I would have been very happy. You know, but it's like, my eldest brother was a Dominican, and he was 6'2", jet black hair, brown eyes, very talented guy. You know, everybody liked him. And here I am, you know, squat, fat, you know, middle of the road, true soldier, you know, I've stuck it out all these years. If I could be, well, I don't anymore, but when I was young, I would look at him and I would wish, oh gosh, why can't I be like him? What's the answer to that? Is there an answer? Nobody has any suggestions? There's no answer. I am who and what I am, you see? And this is, I can only be like poor Martha, you know? I can only be who I am. And this is true for every one of us. And until you reach the point of being content with that, you will never be free of all of these kinds of imaginations. And everything is about letting God be God in your life. And everything else is not God. And so all the things that you think are so important, especially when you're young. I mean, when I think back to when I was your age, you know, I thought so much was important. So much was really, and I was going to change the little world in which I lived. I was unsuccessful. It's still the same today as it was then. Well, pretty much. So there is about this a kind of urgency for St. Thomas, you see. That is, it isn't just like, gee, I hope I'm going to become virtuous, but there's a real energy. And what is that energy? That I am the beloved of God. It isn't my love for God. It is God's love for me. And, you know, very often people will say to me as a spiritual director, I don't love God as I should. And I almost always think the same thing, like, tell me something I don't know. I mean, no kidding. You don't love God the way you should? I know that. I could have told you that the first day you came to see me. It isn't about how I love God. It is the discovery of how much I am the object of his love. That is what begets the capacity to love God in return. And you see, that's what virtue is about. And therefore, while I know that the capital sins and vices are very important, but they're not as important as the virtues that are infused in us and that make it possible for us to endure the pursuit of the vices and the capital sins in order to be liberated for God's love. It is very dangerous for anyone to say to God, I love you. This is not a simple thing to do. I mean, I'm sure we've all said it. I love you, God. But in a way, when you think about it, it might be better, might be more wise to say, I would like to love you, or teach me to love you. Because, you know, to be beloved of God is not easy to discover. It's not easy to believe in. It's not easy to live. And this is why most of us cling to or are attached to certain vices or certain capital sins, because they create you might say they give us a little privacy from God. I was recently talking to a young man who's trying his vocation as a Carthusian monk. And, you know, I don't know if you know, the Carthusians live in solitude. They go into a a cell. It's a little house, really. Kind of charming. I kind of like, it would be great to have a little apartment of your own, you know. Although the only heat they have is from this stove that they have to feed with wood. I don't know. I don't think I could do all of that. But when in talking to him, when he first started talking to me about being a Carthusian, he said, "Well, Father, it would be so wonderful just to have the day free for God. And, you know, I could read and pray." And well, of course, I said to him, "Well, do you really want God to be that close to you?" "Well, of course." I said, "Well, you know, go up to the Charterhouse and make a retreat and see." Well, of course, after the fifth day of being in total solitude, he was ready to come screaming out of the Charterhouse, because to be that, to come close to the truth of how intense God's love is for you, this is not a simple thing. And even though we all want love, do we want to be that loved? You know? I mean, unrelenting love. And that's why one should be a little cautious and learn how to say to God, "I love you, but my love is very imperfect. And it's only going to be made perfect insofar as I believe in his love for me." And this is why, as I said to you earlier, while in the ancient tradition, the phrase, the search for God became very became emblematic of the spiritual life, especially of the monastic life. For Dominicans or Thomists, I think we would say that really it's about God's search for me, God's search for us, because he is relentlessly pursuing us through the mystery of the sacred humanity of Jesus Christ. And, you know, what more could he do than what he has done? That his body has been broken and his blood has been poured out for you and for me. And so the more we realize that the enormity of this, the happier we will be. I'm not saying all the things I wanted to say here. For Thomas, virtue is not a sometime thing. So just because you decided not to tell a lie today, or not to take something that doesn't belong to you, or not to cheat on an exam, or not to, whatever it is, envy someone, virtue really is a constant disposition. And so this is why it is important that one repeat these interior acts over and over again. Reflection is so important. Now, recently, I was teaching a class in the seminary, and I referenced St. Bernard of Clairvaux's De Considerazione, which is his little work. Well, it's really advice he sends to a pope. But the fourth section is about pondering the quality of your life. And one of the seminarians, I had never thought about this, when I said it's about consideration, he said, "Oh, you mean that how you have to be considerate of other people?" I said, no, it's about thinking about your own life. Well, you know, and then this led to a discussion in the classroom. Again, it's so interesting how you learn things from the people you're trying to teach. You think you know something, and they tell you what something new. But I was surprised at the number of the young seminarians when I said, "Well, do you ever just sit in your room and think about your life?" And one of them said something that I thought was very illuminating. He said, "Well, do you mean worrying?" Aha. So I said, "Oh, well, that's interesting." So my detective, I think if I didn't become a Dominican, I would have become a detective, you know, or a spy. I wouldn't mind doing that, you know, double agent, that kind of thing. So this one seminarian said, "Well, when I look at my calendar," and it's all electronic, of course, they have it on their watches now. I mean, I don't know. Well, they look at their watches to find out how many steps they've taken in a day and what their calendar is like. And when he looks at his calendar, he gets anxious. I don't know, is this true for a lot of you? Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm getting some. All right. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about anxiety. I'm talking about sitting there thinking, what's the quality of my life? What am I? How am I living in such a way that I am becoming more myself? You see, for St. Thomas, virtue means not only that you can do the very best that you're capable of, but that in a consequently, that means that you become more yourself. You become actually more the person that you are or are called to be, to use the modern phraseology. And that's what I mean by sitting and thinking about your life. What kind of a person are you becoming? And why is it that you're not becoming a person that is really fulfilling your potential? Now, you can begin, especially when we're young. I remember having many thoughts of figuring out if God understood, and I hoped that he would, if he understood what it's like to be the fifth child in a family of 11 children, well, maybe I'm going to get a little bit of a discount when it comes to, you know, the judgments about the way I've behaved. I mean, you know, if you lived in the family that I lived in, you, blah, 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 blah. If you had an elder brother who was, you know, the star, and you were kind of like, you know, the drone, I mean, you know, well, have mercy on me, God. But, you know, as we grow and mature, we have to realize this is not about looking for a discount because we've ruined our lives. It's looking at the truth of what we've done and honestly owning up to it. And this is why over and over again, it came up again in the questions that you asked this morning, or earlier this afternoon, I mean. You see, humility really is critical because it is honest to God, bottom of the gut honesty about who you are and what you've done with your life. I mean, you know, did my parents mess me up? Of course they did. Didn't your parents mess you up? I mean, I think they did, probably, you know. I mean, my mother was a very holy person, you know. But she messed me up. You messed me up, Mom. But then I took my life and I did with it what I wanted. And that's what I have to face. And it is in facing that that there is a liberty. You see, for St. Thomas, spiritual liberty, interior freedom comes from this radical facing of the truth and owning the truth about one's life. And gradually, I don't really care who messed me up anymore. That I messed up, I know. Who did it? I'm not so sure. Sometimes I've been sure, but you know, I'm old now, I'm not so sure. And then I know, now I know that I've messed other people's lives up. You know, imagine. It's all there. And so this is why humility becomes so critical. And there can only, without humility, you really can never attain a pure heart, a heart that loves God simply because God is, and God is the one who has loved you and rescued you.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.